Fire Aid, that star-studded concert that raised $100 million for wildfire victims. But where did all that money go? Investigative journalist Sue Pasco has been digging for answers, and what she's discovered might just surprise me. Now live on set, you are the editor of Circling the News.
Yes,
we can clearly see that. Thanks for the work that you're doing. So this is personal and professional for you because you lost your home in the Palisades fire, but that's not necessarily how this story landed in your lap. How did this all come to be?
A reader sent me a little note and said, I've never seen any fire aid money. How do I apply for fire aid money? And I thought, well, you know, I've never thought about that. There's 12,000 people, basically, 12,000 homes gone. Those people probably want to know where the money is. This will be an easy task to find out. Mm-hmm. So I contacted the Annenberg. They never responded.
And the Annenberg is?
Foundation, because they are overseeing the wildfire funds, yes. So I emailed them several times. They never responded. I called them several times. They never responded. And finally, it was like almost 2 weeks later, a woman got back to me and she said, oh, I'm sorry for the delay. The person you need to speak to is Chris Wallace. He's a media spokesperson for wildfire funds. So I contacted Chris and I said, you know, victims want to know when they can get their money. Seems like a very simple question. Mm-hmm. He said, basically, they don't. All this money are going to nonprofits, and then nonprofits will take care of making sure the money's distributed. So I looked at, initially they gave $50 million to about 120 nonprofits. And I looked at these nonprofits, and one of them said, we help mobile home parks. And there were two mobile home parks in the Palisades, all low income. Mm-hmm. And so I contacted the people there. They had never received any money. They had never heard of that. When you go through, I would urge everyone to just go to the nonprofits that are listed. If you want a good laugh, I mean, one of the nonprofits cleans preschool bathrooms. Well, after the fire, who knows? Maybe there is a preschool bathroom that needs cleaning.
Yeah. In other words, a lot of these nonprofits are ancillary, if you will.
That's a nice way of saying it.
And you urge people, our viewers, they can go on the Fire Aid website. And yes, in terms of if you're Fire Aid, you can say, we have listed all the nonprofits. So they've given out $75 million so far. And you can see for yourself each nonprofit that has received money. The vetting process, though, that's an interesting angle to this story as well, because there's still another round of funding that will be given out. If you're a nonprofit, you would just have to fill out a simple, very simple questionnaire.
Six questions. Uh-huh.
So what do you make of the vetting process?
I think they're not helping the victims at all. Let's just say, and the other thing you should know, if you go on there, they don't say how much each individual nonprofit gets. So there are two nonprofits that are for the homeless people in the Los Angeles in general, that they're getting money from LASA. So why are these nonprofits also getting money from Fire Aid? I don't know. They're homeless nonprofits. Of course, we're all homeless now. But
And to be clear, we have reached out to actually the Attorney General, Rob Bonta, to see if this is on his radar, because this is a whole lot of money and you are well connected in your community and you don't know anybody who has received fire aid money.
That's correct.
So what is your advice if you're a victim, and there are several who are probably watching tonight who lost their home like yourself, where do you go from here?
Hopefully with people like you who are bringing it to the attention of America, really, because we have all these people I know in the Midwest where I'm from who said, we want to give money. Where do we give it? How can we help the people? This fire aid money is not helping the people. It's helping nonprofits, many of them who have executives that are getting a six-figure salary. The money is not going to the victims that you wanted the money to go to.
Yeah, you make a great point, because a lot of people, this was an international story, and a lot of people gave, people who really couldn't afford to give money, they sent their
$20,
right.
Yes.
Where's that money going, right?
Exactly.
All right, well, if you want to follow Sue's reporting, you can do so. Again, this is at circlingthenews.com.
I am cutting this announcement on the evening of July 21st, 2025. That means you've got 8 days until next Tuesday, the 29th, to take advantage of one of the biggest sales yet at theyellowshowstore.com on some of the most amazing supplements in the world. We have the very best medical grade methylene blue. You can buy one bottle of liquid, already discounted, get one absolutely free. Just go research the medical effects, the medical benefits of methylene blue, and understand we have the very best out there. USP grade, medical grade. We've given it to all our guests. They've all had amazing varying effects. I've given it to over 500 people personally. Only three or four of them have had no effect. That means your mitochondria is in great shape if you have no effect, but most of us need it. It has incredible benefits. The same is for the amazing Irish sea moss, Shilajit, and more. The sale goes until next Tuesday, the 29th of July, 2025, and it funds our operations. Get yours, and it funds the InfoWar. Right now, discounted. Buy one, get one free at thealexshowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
You're tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, joined in studio today by Stuart Rhodes. Stuart Rhodes is, of course, a former attorney and the founder of the original Oath Keepers organization. He was persecuted by the Biden administration for his role in the January 6th protest. His sentence, of course, was commuted by President Trump in January of 2025. Now, usually, Stuart, when you're here, we're talking about politics. We're either talking about your case or just what's happening, you know, in the wider political spectrum. But today you're here to talk about the flooding in Texas earlier this month on July 4th weekend. The cleanup is still going on. They're still finding dead bodies. There's still a major relief mission going on. Welcome to the show, sir, and tell us what's the latest with the Texas flood recovery missions.
So right after it happened, I was contacted by Doc Chambers' organization, the Remnant Ministries, and they asked for my help bringing in volunteers, because I've done like 14 hurricane relief missions with Oath Keepers and bringing in volunteers.
That's what y'all do?
I put a call to action out on Facebook, and we got a lot of folks coming in, search and rescue qualified, medics and doctors and nurses, and just the run, and divers. We had one Navy diver, a recovery diver came in and did his work, and then dogs with dog handlers. So we jumped right in, and we're doing search and rescue right after the event. And hopefully, we were hoping to find live survivors, and sadly, we're not able to find any live survivors. Then it turned into recovery, you know, covering of the remains to bring the family some closure. So we were there in the Kerrville area, up and down the Guadalupe River Valley, and now we're in Leander, because Leander got hit pretty hard, too. A lot of people don't realize that, but Leander got pretty smoked.
Yeah, I was actually just reading an account from somebody in Leander whose parents passed away. They were in an RV and got swept away. And his account was about just the utter failure of specifically the county government in actually deploying search and rescue. And I mean, basically the way he describes it is it was entirely the volunteers. It was, you know, people showing up with their own heavy equipment to move stuff around. And I mean, he was very, very disappointed with the reaction from the county, you know, talking about reporting that his parents were missing, and they never got on any list and nobody was ever looking for him. He eventually found his parents' bodies himself. Really just so many tragic stories out of this. What was your experience with the government response here?
Well, I mean, we were out on the ground, and we would run in contact with search and rescue or brought in from other areas, volunteer fire. We were actually working under the banner of a local fire marshal and his guys. And so they're good. The first responders are good. It's the bureaucracy above them. That's usually the problem.
Right.
When it comes to fast relief. And so on the ground, it does tend to be the local first responders get overwhelmed, and that's why they have to have, like with Hurricane Harvey, Governor Abbott realized there just weren't enough first responders. Even though they brought in search and rescue from all nearby states, still wasn't enough.
Right.
So he did a public appeal for Cajun Navy to come across with their boats. And they showed up this time, too. And like you said, just other rank and file, just average Joe is showing up with their excavators and their skid steers and their bulldozers and pitching in and helping. And same for search and rescue. We worked with a great volunteer search and rescue team, Battle to Be, really, really squared away, really well-trained search and rescue. They showed up. There's a lot of small volunteer organizations like that show up in the first week. That's been the pattern across all the things I've ever seen in hurricane relief, and the flood's no different. So you wind up with, you know, average Joe's helping in, and then small groups that come in, that's what they do, they respond.
And of course, this is an ongoing mission. This is not over by any means. There's still, you know, missing people out there. They're trying to find, I think the official count is there are about three, you know, people that they know still missing. I know you've
I think it's much higher.
You think it's much higher?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Because all along the river valleys, and not just the Guadalupe, but all the tributaries, people are camped out in the summer. And you get transients, you get homeless people down there. There are folks down there that, you know, they don't check into a campsite.
Right.
They just pull up and pitch a tent.
And don't even necessarily have friends or family that know where they are.
Right.
So they could just be missing and nobody would even know.
And they're still finding buried vehicles that are being buried in the mud. So I think the death toll in the end will be much higher if they actually count them all.
Right.
So that's the problem.
They may not want to give us a real number.
Yeah, I'm suspicious of official numbers.
Yeah. Well, but why is that? Why are you suspicious of official numbers? Have you heard?
CYA, bureaucrats don't want to admit that. I mean, look, this was a catastrophic failure. Like with the children camps especially, I've got, you know, like we were taught in the Army, What's the effective range of an excuse? 0 meters.
Right.
So I don't want to hear any excuses about, well, this was, you know, an act of God and no one knew it would get that high. They had a bad flood in 87. They had one back in like 1978, I believe, and they had a really bad one in 1921. So there's a pattern of flooding in the Guadalupe River Valley, and it's just reality of flash floods. And so I don't think children should be sleeping in a campsite next to the river at all. And they can go down there and to swim and stuff during the day, but at night they should be sleeping up top.
And I was just telling you, it happened to me where one time it may have been on the Guadalupe. I was at a youth group. It was right near Kerrville. And, you know, in the middle of the night, we woke up and our tents were floating. I mean, there was like water under the tents, and it can happen really fast. And you don't, you know, luckily we were able to get out, but it could have been really bad. And you know, by the time the sun rose in the morning, I mean, our campsite was unrecognizable. It was all underwater. So, I mean, it can happen really fast. And it's really not an out of the ordinary thing. I've been to Kerrville 3 times in my life, and twice it flooded when I was there in Kerrville. So it's not an out of the ordinary thing. And the Camp Mystic in particular, where so many people, so many little girls passed away, they actually rezoned it. I have the article here. FEMA removed dozens of Camp Mystic buildings from 100-year flood map before expansion. Camp Mystic in Kerr County lost at least 27 campers, counselors, and owner Dick Eastland in historic floodwaters before dawn on July 4th, 2025. The camp was located in a known flood-prone area called Flash Flood Alley and repeatedly sought and received FEMA map amendments, removing dozens of buildings from the 100-year flood hazard zone since 2011. So basically, it should have been no buildings there because it should have been a flood zone, but FEMA removed the flood designation, and so they were able to build there, and it eventually led to this tragedy.
At the request of the camp owner.
Right. So I think FEMA's got blood on their hands here, too.
Well, the state of Texas needs to take responsibility. Whatever FEMA's doing is one thing, but Texas should do their own assessments on flood risk. So, like I said, I don't really care who wants to point fingers at who. All I know is that those children were not protected and were not given the ability to self-rescue. I really believe they shouldn't be sleeping down there at all. They can go down during the day and recreate by the river and then at night sleep up top. But if you're going to have camps down there, they need the ability to self-rescue. And I've got pictures I gave you folks about. There's some local ranchers had steps going up to their home on the hill, and they've got concrete steps with steel guardrails, which is what you can walk up in the middle of a rainstorm. You can still get traction on that and walk up. That's what they need. We found deer up in the trees like 25 feet up, dead deer. So they weren't able to escape up the slippery river banks in time to escape the flood. How is a child going to do that? This is not going to happen. And you can't just, you know, you can't have how many kids, you know, 80 kids at a camp. How are you going to get them out of there in vehicles in time? You're not going to be able to get down there with buses and a caravan of vehicles. They need the ability to self-rescue up steps.
I think we have some of the pictures. I don't know if we can show these. Was there a video you want to show?
That's a Volkswagen Bug. That's right there.
God.
It's Sandy Creek, at the big Sandy Creek. That was, you know, a vehicle that got crushed and washed downstream.
Wow. And for our radio viewers, I mean, it's unrecognizable. It just looks like a mangled mess of metal. It just shows you the power that these storms can hold. And obviously, well, let's for people who want to help, there's a Give, Send, Go.
Yeah, so Buck Up Relief is the organization that's assisting Doc Chambers and all of us with, they just brought in two truckloads of supplies yesterday, and they're helping us out. They got us radios. They're really an awesome organization. So if folks want to go to Buck Up Relief and donate, that'd be the best place they can send money that will actually be used for the right purpose. I would not recommend giving money to the Red Cross, frankly.
Let's talk about that. So buckupreliefmission.net, buckupreliefmission.net, and there's a Give, Send, Go Buck Up Relief Mission that you can find. There it is. So Buck Up Relief Mission on Give, Send, Go or buckupreliefmission.net is how you can
I think their Give, Send, Go is just givesendgo.com/buckup.
Okay.
Yeah.
/buckup. So if you want to help, there's still volunteers out there searching for people, finding bodies. There was a body found yesterday. Why do you tell people not to give to the Red Cross?
Well, I mean, the Red Cross has been bringing billions of dollars, and yet in all the work I've ever done, I've seen one Red Cross truck. Now, I didn't go into Kerrville itself. It's just a swarm of feds. We just stayed out of there. We went and worked all the outlying areas. So there's probably a Red Cross truck there. What I've heard from other first responders, when they call up Red Cross and ask, are you doing this? The answer is no. Are you doing that? The answer is no. So what are they actually doing?
Right.
And it turns out what they'll do is refer you to somebody else. You call them to ask for what can you do? They refer you to someone else. So what I see from Red Cross is just a bureaucratic, top-heavy boondoggle, frankly. It breaks in millions, just like FEMA. You get a lot of money being thrown around, but it never reaches the bottom.
Right, and doesn't actually help anybody that actually needs it. And again, I mean, the stories out of this are just absolutely horrifying. I've been in floods. It's, you know, at a certain point, I try to imagine what it's like when you feel, you know, your house lift from its foundations and start to float. It's like, you know, what do you do at that point? Because the water is so insane. You can't go in the water. You can't stay in your house. You're just screwed.
Yeah. That's why there needs to be alarms, but they also, like I said, if there's campsites, if you're going to run a campsite down next to the river, they need the capacity to self-rescue. Otherwise, don't have it down there.
You probably need evacuation drills.
Sure. Just like fire drills or just like school fire drills. Absolutely. The kids and the camp should have drills that are taught. Here's where the steps are. They should be well lit at night, you know, with emergency lighting. And they also have to have robust communication. Every one of them should have a Starlink or something that they can always make sure they have cell service. And
yeah, or at least walkie-talkies to communicate with a central command somewhere or something, right?
Something. And here's the other wrinkle is that on July 2nd, according to the Austin Firefighters Association, you know, they're tearing their chief apart, saying that he did not respond when requested for mutual aid. But the request for mutual aid, according to them, came in on July 2nd. So on July 2nd, instead of Texas notified all the area, apparently, notified all the area fire departments that, hey, we may need you for mutual aid. Well, if they're doing that in preparation for a possible flood, why not contact the camps and say,
There's
a possible flood coming. You need to make sure the kids are not sleeping down in, next to the river.
So they knew that there was a threat 2 days before.
Apparently. That's what the Austin Fire Department men are saying. The Firefighters Association of Austin is saying that on July 2nd, word came from the state, be prepared for mutual aid. And they're upset with their chief because their chief only assigned like three rescue swimmers to go down and help. And they wanted to have more of a response.
Right.
But I'm wondering what was in that July 2nd briefing from the state.
And why there was no public announcement of any sort.
Right. I mean, so if you have a possible threat, this is the problem when you got businesses dependent on tourism and, you know, they don't want to rock the boat or scare away the clientele. This is a potential problem.
Wow. But I mean, that's like, I don't know, it seems like criminal negligence. I mean, you know a threat is coming, but you do nothing to warn the public.
You don't tell the public until the night of. The alarms are going off like in the middle of the night, right?
Right.
Where there were alarms.
Oh, my God.
Right.
Yeah, it's just horrifying. If the crew can print that story out for me, I would like to go over that because I really haven't talked much about these floods because I was out of town the week that they happened. And so we haven't talked much about like the cloud seeding aspect of it either. And I know that is a big topic of conversation because This is an instance where they admitted they were cloud seeding days before this happened.
Rainmaker, I think they said they were cloud seeding on either July 2nd or 3rd.
Yeah.
Right.
Which obviously, you know, cloud seeding is going to affect the entire climate for the,
well, they
for
claim
the
it doesn't.
Duration.
They claim,
right.
Somehow.
And how could it not? Right.
So they're called Rainmaker and they're trying to bring more rain. But then when they get a catastrophic flood, well, Our cloud seeding had nothing to do with that.
Yeah, how could it not? I mean, it had to contribute to it. Maybe it didn't cause it outright, but like...
Well, that should be investigated.
Yeah. I would think it would have to. And It'd be one thing if you were saying, well, the month before we cloud seeded, it's like, okay, fine. Right. Yeah, that probably didn't. But 2 days before, yeah, that's going to have an effect.
So they have the CEO of Rainmaker on the War Room with Bannon.
Yeah.
On Glenn Beck's show. So he's running all over the place doing a circuit to say that, oh, we had nothing to do with it. So I think thou doth protest too much.
Yeah, it's
suspicious.
It's very suspicious. And I mean, the storm as it existed was bizarre. It was this, I think they were calling it like a land hurricane, but basically just had this red spiral just spinning over this one area for hours and hours and hours. It looked completely unnatural.
That's how one rancher described it. We talked to a local rancher, a landowner there, and we were going up and down the river on his property looking for bodies. And he said that. He's like, hey, it was like a land hurricane.
Yeah.
Like other storms, you know, roll through, This one just stayed and stayed and stayed and kept dumping water on them.
That's just wild.
He's never seen anything like that before. So that's what's suspicious about it. I mean, the reality is flash floods happen. Like, I grew up in Nevada and Arizona. Flash floods happen. People die all the time. Even in Las Vegas, on the city streets, there's certain places you can't go when it's flooding, and people just try to drive through there. And they don't realize how powerful that water is, and they're drowned.
Yeah.
So it happens. But when you have a land hurricane like that, right after they just seeded, that should be investigated. Here's another issue. A lot of the homeowners, their insurance companies are telling them that, well, this is an act of God, so we're not going to cover you. Well, if it turns out to not have been an act of God,
right,
but instead an act of man, you know, rainmaker, now those insurance companies would be on the hook. So, of course, they don't want that to come out. So I'm just saying people need to be aware that there is big money behind a possible cover-up and assisting rainmaker in covering up, because they also don't want to be on the hook.
Yeah, and I guess they would be. I mean, do you think...
Sure.
They're not the only ones, you know, doing this type of activity. I wonder if they just, it's like, it's weird that they're public about it now. Like, it's weird that, and we're looking at the...
Well, there's a contract out there everyone can look at. They're right. Contracted to do that here in Texas. They can't hide it. So now they got to get ahead of it. They got to draw the sting by getting ahead of it, going out there and do some PR. I just think it's suspicious. I mean, I can't prove it, but hey, it should be investigated. And those who can prove it should go and get to the bottom of it.
Absolutely. AccuWeather estimates Texas floods will cost at least $18 billion. Hill Country tragedy, crank among the most expensive in recent state history. And of course, there were the catastrophic flooding last year in North Carolina, where the hurricane, you know, made it all the way up the coast, and you had catastrophic floods then. I mean, what do you think? Do you think it's just because we're manipulating the weather too much and just aren't doing it in a responsible way? Or is this just... Or is it climate change, Stuart? What do you think? Do you think we need to stop eating meat, or do you think we need to stop deliberately seeding the clouds? Which do you think will have a better effect?
Yeah, I think we should stop playing God.
Yeah, right?
Stop messing with the weather. It's an ecosystem. I mean, they should know that, right? They're always yelling at us about the ecosystem.
You would think.
So when you start screwing with one part of the ecosystem, you're going to have unintended consequences, or potentially intended consequences,
right,
somewhere else. Yeah.
And you're not actually creating the weather, right? You're just manipulating it. So any water that falls because of the cloud seeding is water that would have fallen somewhere else, but instead falls there. So
yeah, they're focusing on this one area on purpose.
Yeah.
Right. But then when the flood happens, well, that wasn't us.
Couldn't have been.
Yeah, it couldn't have been.
And it's just, I don't know, man. It's just the amount of water that fell, and seeing the videos we were just showing, where, I mean, it genuinely looks like this hurricane just pops up in the middle of Texas and just sort of self-generates there for a while. It seems impossible in just natural weather patterns that this would happen.
Right. But even if, so of course, what they'll say is this was a, you know, freak accident, 100-year flood. But there have been other floods in the past. So I think the Texas officials need to take it seriously. And they're talking about putting back in a warning system they used to have that they let atrophy. They're talking about putting back in a warning system. But in addition to warning systems, they need to have evacuation plans. And like I said, there should be the ability to self-rescue. In the middle of a rainstorm, when you got roads flooding out, to get buses in to pick the kids up and bring them back out, it takes too long.
Yeah,
they need to be able to self-rescue. So I hope that's why I'm going to go down to the legislature and testify this next week. And, you know, we'll see. It's probably like butting my head against the wall. But it can't just be sirens. It can't just be, oh, it's time to evacuate in the middle of a flood. And now you have no way to evacuate other than the roads. That's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
So that, I think steps are the obvious answer. But yet I've never seen anybody else propose that except for me. So.
Well, and I mean, it just shows you that just no one's coming to save you. Like the government, and it's sort of always the case, right? We say the same thing with shootings and everything else. It's like once the event happens and once all the damage is done, the government will show up and pat itself on the back for what a good job it did, but it's not going to prevent it, and it's not going to actually be there to rescue you. It just shows up to sort of clean up mess at the end.
They have good fast water rescue guys that did come out and they did rescue people. But what I'm saying is the mitigation and prevention side of it before the event. So like left the bang. So you want to be prepared so that you have early warnings as early as possible. You have evacuation notices go out. Like those children camp in particular, what adults decide to do to risk themselves is up to them as adults. But when you've got kids in a camp, parents are trusting that camp to keep their kids safe, and they're trusting the local officials to do the same. And so they all need to coordinate so that when there's, like on July 2nd, apparently, according to the firefighters of Austin, when an alert comes down from the state of a possible flooding next few days, the camp should evacuate at that point. should say, sorry, kids, we can't sleep down here. We're going to move you up to the high school gym or whatever they want to do. Figure out a protocol so that they're not down there at risk. Because once the flooding starts, look what happened.
Yeah.
By the time they knew about it, it was too late. Like you said, they're floating down the river.
Yeah. No, it's just tragic. No warning. Texas County wouldn't spend $1 million on an alert system that would have saved these girls. So, and the way I know...
And then, hey, the state of Texas just spent $1.5 billion to bring in Hollywood to help Hollywood come in here and make movies, as though Hollywood can't afford to do that themselves.
Right.
We gave taxpayer money to Hollywood to make movies in the state.
$1.5 billion?
Yeah, $1.5 billion. So the state of Texas can certainly find the funds to provide for early warning systems, and they probably should also, I hate to say it, but they should also legislate evacuation protocols that if you get an alert, you will evacuate.
Yeah.
You don't have a choice. You're going to run a camp, and this is a business you're making money off of, you should have to comply with the evacuation protocols.
Yeah. Well, because look at what happens when you don't. I mean, if they're like, well, look, we don't want to, you know, scare away the tourists. Well, I'll tell you, I'm probably not going to send my kid to camp anymore. Right. Right. Like, or, you know, right, not that right. I ever have, but, you know, or you don't want to spend $1 million on the warning system. So now you're spending $18 billion on, you know, fixing it up. It's like, you got to spend the money now. I like that left of bang. The way I've been told it from like, when the FBI talks about, you know, terrorist attacks. It's like they don't want to constantly be guarding the goal line, right? You don't want to constantly be in the red line trying to defend one right. yard from the end zone. You want to stop it at the 50-yard line if you can. Don't let it ever get to that point.
That's right.
Yeah,
and the same for emergencies like this. I mean, tornadoes hit so suddenly, but there are sirens for tornadoes. Shelter. You can shelter in place with a tornado. You cannot shelter in place in a flood if
right.
you're down in the flood zone. Your only option is escape. You've got to get out. You got to get to high ground.
So the earlier the warning, the better. And
the earlier the warning, the better. And the more robust the protocols, the better.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, you know, with hurricanes, typically you get a week of heads up because it's crossing the ocean. You can watch right. it come in. But with stuff like with these mysterious land hurricanes that have never existed ever before, you know, you don't get that warning. It just happens all of a sudden. I guess they did have the warning 2 days in advance.
Right.
But, you know, maybe that wasn't enough. And of course, this ties into all of the other natural disasters that we've seen over the last few years, Lahaina burning and Palisades burning. I wonder if they're going to come in and, well, you know, now that this place is flooded, I guess we're going to have low income housing here and, you know, we'll make it a smart city when we come in. Do you know, is there any plan to develop in that way?
I don't know yet. I haven't been paying attention to any of that. I'm just looking at the legislature, what they're proposing. So far, all I've seen is sirens. So I just hope it's more robust than that. I really do.
Well, again, if people want to help, you go to buckupreliefmission.net or givesendgo/buckup, we think is the URL. But the search, I was going to say the rescue is still ongoing, but, you know, it's been over 2 weeks at this point. It's really just looking for bodies now, right? But there are still people every day out there working with the cleanup and
as
finding
they're cleaning
bodies.
Up, like just the other day, excavator was out there on a second bucket pull out of a pile. The leg was sticking out of the bucket. So they're still finding body parts, sadly. So, but that's important, you know, as they do their recovery and help clean up, they have to be mindful and watching out for bodies.
Right.
Yeah. Because otherwise people have a missing family member. They have no idea what happened to them.
Right.
So,
and I'm going to read at least part of this account of this guy whose parents were lost, because it's tragic, but it just goes to show you that, like, when it comes down to it, when the emergency strikes, it's not the government that's going to give you relief. It's going to be your friends and family volunteering their time and effort. We'll be back with Stuart Rhodes on the other side, and I'm going to show you some more videos about the flooding, since I really haven't covered it much since I was out of town. I got a lot of stuff I can show you on the other side. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back.
Huge announcement, ladies and gentlemen. I am beyond excited about this. I've wanted this knife for a year. It's super high quality. They finally got the right supplier and a bunch of them. It's in a beautiful keepsake black box with my signature in silver lettering on the top. And when you go inside, this incredible combat battle dagger, limited edition Alex Jones signature battle dagger, a high-tech, super high-quality sheath, with a high-tech clip under your belt or your pants, and it's got a special system where the knife doesn't come out when it's upside down. It takes a little pull to get it out. It is amazing. This is, in my opinion, the very best defense battle dagger you can get. It's an incredible price for $79.99 right now. This knife by itself in store sells for $100 every day, but we bought 5,000 of them, so got the price down really low. Wholesale, so we can pass that on to you, and the profit we make goes in to fund this operation. So you don't just get a great defensive system for yourself and your family, great in your car, great on your side, great in your purse, your glove compartment, also skin a buck with it, whatever you need. This is an amazing knife. You not only, though, get something to defend yourself, you defend the Republic in the information war by funding this operation. So get your limited edition Alex Jones signature battle dagger at thealexjonesstore.com right now, and it keeps this operation on the air. This isn't just a blade, it's a symbol of freedom. Limited edition Alex Jones signature battle dagger is forged by patriots ready to defend the Republic from the globalist agenda. Featuring a double-edged black-coated blade for unmatched durability and precision, this dagger is built to last. On one side is etched my signature, while the other side proudly bears 1776, a reminder that the spirit of revolution lives on stronger than ever. With its ergonomic, non-slip grip designed ready for any mission, the dagger isn't just a tool, it's a statement. Whether you're adding it to your collection or keeping it close as a symbol of resistance and for defense, this blade is for those who know that the answer in 1984 is 1776. Get yours now. And then, we are announcing a limited sale, the Power Drive bundle of Power Plant and Methyl Drive, which goes incredibly good with Methylene Blue. And both of these give you incredible natural energy, clarity, and focus. But you mix them together with Methylene Blue, I will tell you, in Chase Geyser's observation himself, 10 times stronger than Turbo Force. Did you hear what I just said? 10 times stronger than Turbo Force. Get yours now, discounted massively, 50% off when you get them together. 50% off on the Power Drive bundle for a limited time, 1 week, at thealexjonesstore.com, and it funds this operation, 1776 worldwide. Please remember that this broadcast is only as powerful as you make it. When you share the live feed from Real Alex Jones on X, on your email list or text message, on other platforms, word of mouth on X, it changes the world. When you share the feed from Infowars.com/show, it changes the world. So remember, Paul Revere's, you're not part of the solution. You are the solution. You're everything. When you share the live feed, when you share the clips of the show, when you send that out to everyone you know, that's the reach, the amplification. That is 99% of this operation. You are the whole shooting match. And the info war is everything. And you are the mind, the bones, the guts, the blood, the will, the soul of the info war. So release your will and power now. Destroy them.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, folks. Stuart Rhodes in studio with me. This is Harrison Smith. You're watching The American Journal, Infowars.com, band.video. And we're talking about the Texas floods and the response to it and the ongoing search and rescue missions going on. You can go to buckleupreliefmission.net, and there's a Give, Send, Go /buckleup. Buckupreliefmission.net, buckupreliefmission. Thank you. You can also support Stuart by going to his Give, Send, Go, givesendgo.com/GAF5B, and that's the Stuart Rhodes Needs Help Facebook, or Give, Send, Go, rather, obviously to deal with not just the, legal aspects of, what Stuart's been going through and the persecution that he faced under Joe Biden, since been commuted by Trump, but still there's lingering things he has to deal with, but also, of course, volunteering and going in and helping out. You're not getting paid for any of this, right?
No, it's out of my own pocket.
Yeah. So, obviously, this is what, is what we rely on, volunteers going in and helping people out. And I want to play a video now just to emphasize the bizarre nature of this storm and the sort of unprecedented level of water that was poured on this very small area, again, pointing to, I would call it evidence of unnatural, you know, assistance on this storm. Let's go now to this video comparing Niagara Falls to the Texas floods. It's sorry, we're having a little bit of technical difficulties here, but and it'll pop up in just a second. Let me know when y'all get it in. But the idea is, it says Niagara Falls versus Texas floods. I just put it in. Should be clip number 11. We also have some videos that Stuart that we're going to pull in for Stuart too. But essentially, long story short, billions and billions of gallons fell on this one tiny area. Comparing it to Niagara Falls is like just actually gives you some sort of visualization of just how much water this was. But again, I think this points to the fact that this wasn't natural. Let's go to the video now.
So this is just mind-blowing right here. Niagara Falls, 757,000 gallons of water per second going over those falls. That works out to about 45 million gallons a minute, 2.7 billion gallons an hour, or roughly 65 billion gallons of water a day going over the edge. Now, that is an absolutely incredible amount of water, but it is only roughly half the amount of the 120 billion gallons of water that fell on Central Texas this past July 4th. So they say about 12 inches of rain fell in those early morning hours, which led the rivers to do this, to rise about 26 feet in a matter of 45 minutes. That's less than an hour. So when you see the absolute devastation and destruction, and you try to wrap your head around just how much water this is, it is roughly 2 days worth of the water going over Niagara Falls, all falling on Texas in just a matter of hours.
Yeah.
Just mind blowing.
Right.
Mind blowing amount of water drops, which again, it's like, how does that even happen naturally?
I mean, I think it's possible, but because they acknowledged they were doing cloud seeding just days before, that should be investigated. It's like can't just be a coincidence. And he's being looked at, investigated for sure.
Are you going to talk about that when you go to talk about to the legislature?
Absolutely. Yeah. Call them out. They should be investigated. And Attorney General Paxton should be on that right now. Should be conducting an investigation.
And probably the people in the county who hired them should be investigated as well. I mean, how do you mess up that badly? I mean, how do you cloud seed to a point?
Well, you play God, right? When you play God like that,
you're just messing with forces you don't understand.
Right. It's just really strange that a lot of these people claim to be environmentalists, and yet they're going to be monkeying with the weather like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's a closed system. You can't just create rain and have it not affect, you know, other places. It just seems so short-sighted.
Or you might make plenty of rain and more than you expected.
More than you could possibly need. Here's the story that we were referencing earlier. Austin Firefighters Association votes no confidence in Fire Chief Joel Baker. The Austin Firefighters Association announced on July 11th that it voted no confidence in Austin Fire Chief Joel Baker over concerns about his response to the floods in Kerrville. According to the news release of the association, 93% of the association voted no confidence in Baker after he refused to deploy Austin firefighters to Kerrville until very late in the event due to financial reasons. It's absolutely outrageous that the Austin Fire Chief Joel G. Baker would not allow highly trained firefighters from Austin to respond to Kerrville. The association wrote in an Instagram post, because of this egregious dereliction of duty, lives were very likely lost. And they say this was a misguided attempt to save money. They say, I say misguided because the fire department is fully reimbursed by the state to deploy, Association President Bob Nix wrote in the post. I explained the reimbursement process to Chief Baker last week, and he failed to understand this very simple concept. That's just crazy. So Baker suspended emergency deployments in late May or early June to save money as the city of Austin faces a budget deficit. Well, I mean, we got to build all those new bike lanes, I guess. We got to spend $1 billion funding Hollywood to make movies outside of Austin. We don't have money to spend on things like flood. I mean, at a certain point, this level of incompetence, how is it everywhere? Like, I just feel like
that's government for you. That's bureaucracy.
I guess so.
They mentioned in there a July 2nd order that came down from the state, right?
I haven't seen that yet. That might be from a different story. This in particular is about the this vote. Let's see. I don't know. You can see if there's more. There might be more to that story that we haven't printed out yet. This is the other. This is the latest from Axios. Texas floods missing count falls to 3, Kerr County officials say. The number of people missing in Texas's catastrophic flooding has fallen to 3 from 160 in the immediate aftermath of the extreme weather event, the Kerr County officials said as the search enters a third week. The July 4th flooding killed at least 135 people, with 107 fatalities occurring in Kerr County, including the children at Camp Mystic, a children's summer camp for girls along the bank of the Guadalupe. The last missing person count 6 days ago was 97. You think that the actual number of missing people is probably significantly higher, and they're just trying to cover their butts here?
Well, I think the reality is they're not going to ever be able to identify all the people that were missing, because they might have been transients and homeless people. There were homeless camps along the river.
Right.
We do know that's a fact. So what we're hearing is that those camps got washed away, and so there's very likely to be other people out there that are still missing.
You know, just sort of expanding out, it just seems to me like there are so many things in America that are just basic things that are just sort of falling by the wayside. And so it's almost like, you can point to certain things like the Palisades fire, and you can go, okay, maybe this was a conspiracy. Maybe this was them. They wanted to clear out this land to, you know, revamp it into a smart city of some sort. Like, maybe there's a very deliberate, actual high-level conspiracy going on here, or maybe this is just the overall conspiracy that just is weakening us as a country, just makes us less capable of dealing with things. We're putting incompetent people in charge of these very necessary, you know, systems. So it's almost, it's like, it's
like
not
that chief in Austin, but what I saw of him online, he's DEI obsessed.
Right.
He's all about, we got to make sure that, you know, the fire department looks like the community. So he's hiring based on skin color.
Right.
And demographics, not on capacity.
And you're talking about life and death, right, circumstances, right, and they're hiring off of
DEI
race
first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
So it's insane. So, you know, it's like you see so many things. You know, I went on a big rant about old Sneaky Pete spending $80 billion on DEI programs and letting the air traffic control system just, you know, fall apart. And it's like, people are dying because of this. And how do we reverse this process where just are these necessary systems that we have, that we depend on, that we just sort of assume exist, right? It's just, we, you know, America has been so successful in this. You just assume that, like, when you call 911, they're going to dispatch an army to come help you. But now we're in this position, like in Austin, where if you call 911, you might get put on hold. You might, you know, or they're not even going to come if it's not an imminent threat, and they'll come later and, you know, fill out a form or whatever. But it's like all of these systems are just collapsing in incompetence and failure, or
and grift.
Grift and, yeah, DEI. And so it's just emblematic of all of these issues that we're having, and that we're only going to increasingly have as we continue to seemingly, like, sacrifice our country on the altar of DEI and whatever else.
Yeah, well, it's not only DEI, but it's also grift.
Yeah.
You know, you've got, whether it's FEMA and the contracts they give out, or it's the state of Texas and the contracts they give out. A lot of times they'll give out contracts to their buddies to come in afterwards and clean up and do renovation, and they get paid, you know, like $400 an hour to go out there and do menial tasks.
Right.
So they're being paid really high prices for something that all the volunteers are doing for free.
Right.
So that's the other part of it, is the grift continues. And further you get away from the actual event, first week or so, it's almost all, you know, local first responders and other guys coming in from other first responder networks. And then you got all your volunteers, and they're all just busting their butts to get everything done. First week is almost always just really, really good to go people. But then you get the bureaucrats coming in later on, and then their buddies, the contractors who have these big, big expensive contracts, and they want to push out all the volunteers, make room for themselves to make money.
Yeah.
That's what you wind up seeing.
And yep.
I've heard that from a lot of first responders, that 2 or 3 weeks in, they get pushed out because the officials don't want them there. They want their buddies to come in and do the cleanup and get the contract money.
And we've seen, Lahaina was a place where, you know, the cleanup crews were charging like $1 million a lot just to haul away trash. And it's like, you could rebuild a house there for $1 million, but they're just removing the trash, something that I'm sure people would volunteer to do for free if you wanted them to, but instead they're literally paying out billions of dollars to these contractors.
That's taxpayer money.
Yep.
It's like the USAID thing, right?
Yeah.
You get favored status and you get connections, you get in there and you get the money.
Yeah, and that's sort of the thing that you know, pointing to the Pete Buttigieg or the, you know, the California disaster and the Palisades and just no water in the reservoirs. And it's this sort of ubiquitous mindset of just like, get what you can while you can. If you're put in a position, it doesn't matter if you fulfill the obligations of that position, you just use that position to, you know, benefit your particular ethnic group or your particular ideology or your particular sexual, you know, orientation. And so the actual necessary obligations of these positions go completely unfulfilled and people literally die as a consequence. And it's like, what is it going to take for the American people to decide, you know what, actually we need competence first and foremost. We need people who are actually going to do the job right in those positions, not the Pete Buttigieg's out there that are just going to, you know, write $80 billion checks for their friends at, you know, in their Democrat coalition because he thinks it'll increase his likelihood of getting support when he runs for president later. So it's just like, it's just in a word like selfishness, right? It's just this pervasive selfishness of all these people who they get put in a position of power and all they see is money signs and all they see is, oh, now I get the checkbook and I get to write checks to my friends. Like, how do we deal with this when it's so pervasive and it seems like it's every position in every local, national, international government? It's this dog eat dog, get what I can for me and who cares what the consequences are mindset. Like, how do we even deal with this?
Well, I think it's just human nature. Yeah. I mean, the corruption that I've seen in Texas, not, aside from the disaster relief, but just the corruption across the state. I've been doing a speaking tour for True Texas Project all over Texas. And I just hear about local corruption down to the town level, yeah, where if you're running against the local good old boy network, you get pulled over and harassed by the police. You get pulled over and given a ticket, you know, by the local sheriff.
Yeah, it's so infuriating because it's just these little
fiefdoms.
Yeah, these little fiefdoms or these little chip, you know, it's all just chip away at the, you know, ability of our country to function. And eventually it's just the foundation is completely shattered and we just can't do anything.
But that's why it comes back to us as volunteers.
Yeah.
I think the American people need to make sure that their own community is strong. They need to have robust neighborhood watches and that should include disaster relief.
Yes.
That's why the CERT program was created by FEMA, right? The community emergency response teams, our citizens emergency response teams, the trained citizens. So I think counties should do it themselves. I wouldn't rely on FEMA. I think the county should do that. They should train the people in self-rescue and how to rescue somebody else without becoming a casualty yourself.
Yeah.
You know, if you're talking about flooding, just the reality of flooding, you got to escape. And, what's the best time to do that? As soon as you hear about possible flooding, it's when you need to escape. It could be raining. It could be dry where you're at, not raining, but upriver in the tributaries could be raining and dumping water, and here comes a flood.
And that's what we've got some of the videos from that folder I put in. I mean, some of the flash flooding video that came out of this, it makes you appreciate, you know, the power that this water has. And I mean, I've seen things. We cross a low water crossing, and like if there's water over the water cross, I will not cross it because I've seen videos of cars getting swept away in like 3 inches of water. Like it's crazy how powerful water is.
Yeah.
And you got to give it the respect that it's due. And in the video that we just showed, that flash flooding, it's not raining. It's not raining when the flood happens, right? Look, it's not raining right here, but here comes the flood, right? So it doesn't have to be raining by you for you to be swept up in this flood. And you can just see the absolutely unimaginable rise.
Yeah.
As it happens.
That's the reality of dry climates where the ground is hard and packed and you know, stony. There's nothing there to hold the water back. And so when it comes in quick, it comes in fast.
And what you were just saying is something that you've been saying the entire time that I've been interviewing you for InfoWars. Have a community, know your neighbors, be prepared. And it's not even like necessarily like you want to have a militia to go out and fight people. No, it might be a disaster.
You should have that too.
You should have that too, exactly. But that's not the only reason it's a good idea.
Right.
You got to have community connections so you can help each other out or know who might need help. You know, if you're living in this flood prone area and you know that there's an elderly lady down your street that needs help, you can go and rescue her. But if you haven't done the work beforehand, you know, it's too late by that point. So maybe talk a little bit more about how people can sort of organize and if people see what's going on and go, gee, maybe my neighborhood should have a neighborhood watch of some sort. What advice would you give to people watching for how they can sort of be prepared and get started making these community groups?
Yeah, Ground Zero would be a neighborhood watch, but like make it more than just about crime prevention. Make it about disaster preparedness. And hey, go take a CERT class. Why not? So go get CERT certified under FEMA, even though I think FEMA's a joke, but why not get that? because it'll help you in dealing with local first responders. And I still encourage people, as I've always said, you should go join your local volunteer fire department. I served on one for 1 year in Montana. I was just a beginner, but at least got exposure to that system. But I think anywhere you can, if I move into a small town here in Texas, I'll go join a volunteer fire department. We should all do that. Become a volunteer EMS, you know, EMT or paramedic. Just become part of the first responder community and make it stronger. Half the fire departments in the country are volunteer.
Right.
So go join and make it stronger. Go learn search and rescue. Join a volunteer search and rescue team and get the training. That'd be useful too. So if you're fit enough to do that, go do it.
Yeah.
Everybody else, make sure you've got radios. Make sure you've got some way to communicate. Make sure you've got a plan for your family to escape. If you live in a flood area, just be, you know, have yourself, you know, set up on some kind of radar system. You're watching. Anytime there's a warning coming through, that's when you have to do watches. Like one person stays up and watches the weather and watches the radar. You don't just all go to sleep.
Right.
Trust that the government's going to do it. Because they're probably not going to.
Right.
We've seen too many failures of official alert systems in this country.
That's also something like during the break we were talking, and I was, you know, sort of criticizing the response, and you wanted to emphasize it's not the guys on the ground that we have a problem with. It's not the first responders. Yeah. They're awesome.
Local volunteer fire and or paid fire, search and rescue, they're all great people. I have no issues with any of them. It's the bureaucrats above them that come in and they want a CYA. Yeah. Their biggest concern is PR. Is there public relations and how they look to the public?
Right.
So they'll tend to take credit for something other people have done, and they also tend to cover up what they did. Like if July 2nd, the state of Texas put out a warning to the Hill Country first responder community, how come that wasn't also given to the camps?
Yeah, that really is.
That needs to be looked into.
That's a major oversight if that's the case. And right. At least, and the problem is by covering their butts, we don't learn the lessons that we should learn, so it doesn't happen again, right? If they come out and go, hey, look, here's the mistakes we made. Here's next time. Here's what we should do instead. Then we can actually have a positive positive, but.
And I've heard people say, well, now's not the time to finger point. We just need to focus on helping people in need. I understand that, but when you've got politicians who are already spinning the narrative. And they're waiting for the crisis to pass. Then I want to know, what are they going to do to make sure it doesn't happen again?
Right.
But you can't let them off the hook. That's why it's good that they're having a special session. Of course, they packed it with all kinds of other nonsense.
Right.
But it's at least a start. But they should be held to account.
Yeah.
There should be hard questions. They're going to have a town hall meeting in Kerrville from one of these legislative sessions. They're going to do it in Kerrville to get the feedback from the local community. So I hope the local community really holds their feet to the fire.
Yeah.
About what are you going to do so this doesn't happen again? That's what we want to know.
Absolutely. And of course, again, if you want to contribute to the Buck Up Relief Mission, buckupreliefmission.net, Buck Up Relief Mission on GiveSend Go. And of course, Stuart Rhodes also is doing this all on, you know, his volunteer time, and you can contribute to his GiveSend Go by going to givesendgo.com/GAF5B. And again, you know, it's just relentless. It's like from the Palisades fire to the Lahaina fire to the flooding in North Carolina, the flooding in Texas. It's like I get that there are some things that you just got to deal with. Like there's going to be flooding. There's going to be fires. They get out of control.
Yeah.
It happens, but you can prepare. You can be prepared for this. You can at least mitigate the consequences. The individuals themselves can, you know, be better prepared to deal with it, but the government especially can just not mess things up. And it's just continuous. It's just, how can they not do this stuff right? I know, but it's like how can you not just have like the waters filled? And if it's your responsibility to make sure there's water to fight fire and the water's not there,
yeah,
in Palisades, like you got to be held to account. You got to be, I don't know, charged with.
Was
that, you know,
fire chief, was that fire chief ever fired?
I don't think so. I they're not in jail, which they probably should be.
She was a Black lesbian, right?
She was a diversity hire of one sort or another.
Hey, she could be an awesome chief and be a black lesbian, but that can't be the priority.
Exactly.
Can't be demographics and checking boxes.
Exactly. And it's like, okay, I can at least understand, like, if you want to do DEI at Subway sandwiches, whatever, you know, who cares? You get the people a job. But, like, you're talking about life and death. You're talking about whether planes land or crash. You're talking about whether fires are fought or just burn your entire landscape to the ground.
Right.
You cannot be doing DEI when it comes to these life and death systems.
Or like with the Austin Fire Department, you've got a DEI obsessed chief who apparently was bean counting and put that priority above life-saving.
It's just insane. Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass says it's not a problem at all that city continues fire season without a permanent fire chief. Well, I mean, I guess, what's she going to do, mess it up? You know, what are they going to do? You know, not be there for the people? It's
they've
like,
can't
get any worse.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
It's just insane. And again, you read some of the accounts. This one guy, Brent Thomas, 11, I'm trying to get him on the show, but we're having trouble getting in contact with him. But he put forward a comment from this guy, Wesley Daly, and it's too long for me to read right now, but you can go and I'll retweet it and you can look it up. Or I did retweet it, actually, and you can go find it on my account at Harrison H. Smith. And it's the helplessness and the loneliness of the average American out there whose his parents go missing in this flood. He can't get the county to help him. He can't get the firefighters to help him. He's just out there on his own. And luckily there's other volunteers that come together. And it just reminds you of how little you can rely on this government and how you've got to be prepared. And it's too late to be prepared once the disaster happens. You've got to be prepared beforehand.
That goes back to starting Hurricane Harvey. That was our first hurricane relief mission that we did with Oath Keepers. And that's the lesson from there, is that they brought in first responders from all the neighboring states, search and rescue teams, swift water rescue, you know, great guys, but there's just not enough of them. Mm. That's why they had to ask for Cajun Navy to come in and all the other volunteers. We were there too. So tons of volunteer groups came together, a lot of them veteran run, a lot of veterans, and pitched in and got it done because there's just not enough manpower.
Yeah.
And that's the wisdom of the founders. We told us that a militia is necessary for the security of a free state. And that security also includes being able to respond to natural disasters.
Sure.
It should be the people themselves organized as their local militia that take care of fire, search and rescue, you know, all the things that we do after a disaster.
Yeah.
Looking for people, wellness checks, all that stuff. That's what we've been doing, is wellness checks. We went around in a community in Lander and we asked the locals, you know, who are people that are in their homes that are older, elderly, and they're just kind of stuck there and aren't coming out. And one guy had diabetes and multiple heart attacks. We went and saw him, and our nurse checked him out and made sure he's okay. So you can do that. Your community should be able to do that themselves. And we shouldn't have to rely on it as much outside help. If we were better organized in each county and across the country, we'd be able to help ourselves and self-rescue.
Yeah. And if anything, the government can be there as a coordinator and help to sort of, you know.
You really don't want government as a coordinator.
Well, but you don't want them in charge of everything.
No, but they can bring in assets.
But they can bring in assets. Or they could at least, you know, be there to help to, you know, coordinate or organize or, you know.
Well, the best thing the government can do is bring in, like, more outside search and rescue teams. Cadaver dogs were huge. Cadaver dogs can differentiate between dead animals and dead humans. We can't.
Right.
So not as well. So we were winding up, you know, looking through brush piles and come to find out it's either a pile of rotting fish or a dead deer or something.
Right. And the cadaver dogs can help you avoid wasting that energy.
Right.
Well, the search continues. BuckUpReliefMission.net. I'm sorry. BuckUpReliefMission.net. BuckUp Relief Mission on GiveSendGo. GiveSendGo.com/GAF5B to contribute to Stuart. And God bless the people affected by this absolute tragedy.
Just got in my methylene blue, ultra methylene blue USP grade from TheAlexJonesStore.com. And I've heard all the rants and raves about this. Real interested to see how I'm going to feel. I'm going to do a third dropper and then some water right now. And I am going to see, that's plenty. Maybe that's a little bit more. I'm going to mix this up. And pretty excited to see how this is going to work. So after I fully drink this, I will let everybody know the effects of, hopefully, of what is the unlimited power. What's going on, Xers? Jay Rocket here. Just giving y'all an update. It's been an hour past doing the one dropper of the ultramethylene blue USP grade, the AlexJonesStore.com. Currently at the gym right now, and it's hard to explain what I feel, other than I do feel the mental clarity. I don't have any cloudy thoughts. My focus seems relaxed, but very on point. And the energy kind of feels clean, no jittery, things like that. I haven't really felt any tingling or anything. Maybe if I'll probably take a
you know, an extra dropper next time. This is on an empty stomach as well, so definitely feel just cool, calm, and collected, but very focused, very centralized. It's a very calm Zen feeling. So if you haven't gotten to try this stuff yet, y'all need to go to the alexjonesstore.com and get your methylene blue today.